Hello and welcome to Oscar Mike Radio. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. Oscar Mike Radio is co-produced with Sense to One Productions. What's your podcast doing? I want to thank my sponsors and supporters as we count down to number 500. And again, we are mission in flight. And ladies and gentlemen, we're mission in flight in a place I have never been before, but walked past thousands of times. We are in Boston City Hall. If you told me that we'd be doing something like this 10 years ago, I would have laughed. But I have a story I want to share with you, and a gentleman who's been involved with this and veterans issues and veterans service for a long period of time. I want to welcome Counselor Flynn to Oscar Mike Radio. Counselor, thank you so much.
Travis, it's great to be with you. And I also want to say thank you, Travis, for the important work you are doing as educating people across the city, across Massachusetts, but also being a strong advocate for veterans and military families as well.
Thank you very much, sir. I'd be remiss if we didn't start the conversation talking about your father, Mr. Ray Flynn, because when I first moved to Boston, he was very prominent in veteran circles in the city of Boston. And I have to ask, what was his influence like on you in your service in the military and now?
Well, I'm proud of both my mother and father.
Okay.
And their contributions they have made, but also the family that they raised. We were born in South Boston, and my parents still live at the same house in South Boston, come from a large family. But I learned from my parents, from my father, from my mother, but also from my neighbors in South Boston about service to others, whether it was in the military or community service. But I had a special relationship with, certainly with my father, but also with my uncle Dennis, who is a Vietnam veteran, who's my father's brother. He's a Vietnam veteran, Boston firefighter, but a distinguished, recognized Vietnam veteran. And one of the reasons I joined the military at a very young age, I think I was 17 years old, is, you know, out of respect for my community, out of respect for the history of the people of South Boston, but also I wanted to serve. I wanted to serve in the United States Navy. I wanted to be part of something that was bigger than me. And I wanted to give back to my country, because I still believe that we live in the best country in the world, and each person should make a commitment or a sacrifice to our country. And I tried to do that by serving over 20 years in the military.
Over 20 years. You do that for 20 years, and you serve in the Navy, and certainly South Boston has a strong naval tradition. Well, Massachusetts does in general with the Constitution. I ask all veterans this because it varies so greatly. What was your transition out of the Navy back into civilian life fully like, Counselor?
Well, I was a reservist, and I enlisted in 1987 and stayed in for a period of time, got out, went back in again. But I did about 23 or 24 years, and after September 11th, 2001, I volunteered for active duty and did two deployments, including one deployment at Joint Task Force Guantanamo. I was in the detention facility for 12 months, and I did another deployment in the Persian Gulf. I was stationed at the 5th Fleet, which is Bahrain, right across from Saudi Arabia. So I had a wonderful experience and opportunity, but what I learned most about it was the people that I served with, the incredible sacrifice service that they have made. And those are the people I respected and tried to use their example in my current position today, use the examples that I learned from the military and lessons learned as well. And that's helped me greatly. But my transition was like many others. It could be challenging at times, but I did receive support from the VA healthcare system, which I needed. I'm still engaged in the VA healthcare system, have exceptional medical team at Jamaica Plain and West Roxbury. And I'm fortunate enough to have had and continue to have the support from the VA from my wife, Kristen, and my children, and from my neighbors in South Boston. I think when you come from a neighborhood like South Boston that had the first Vietnam Veterans Memorial in the country, those are really the people I respected growing up. Tommy Lyons and my Uncle Dennis and Paul Evans and so many others, Lou Nealand. But I saw the service that they contributed, and they came back to Boston. They came back to South Boston, helped build this great city, this great neighborhood, but also the country. And I was fortunate enough to receive a lot of support when I was overseas from my neighbors in South Boston.
It sounds like you were one of those veterans that didn't self-isolate. You got out in the community, you allowed the community to support you, and were able to start your transition, challenges notwithstanding, in a good light.
Yeah, I have. I have a good life. I have a good family. I love my job. I love being associated with the residents of Boston, with my constituents. I especially enjoy working on veterans issues and supporting military families. I'm active in the Disabled American Veterans and frequently go to Washington, D.C. to lobby for legislation that impacts veterans and military families. But what I also do is I try to educate elected officials here in Boston that are unfamiliar with veterans issues and try to educate them about why it's important to support veterans, why it's important to support military families, because as the only veteran on the city council, as the only disabled veteran on the city council, I'm not going to be here forever. And when I leave, I do want someone that's able to pick up the ball and effectively advocate for veterans' issues. I do think that's important, and that's a priority for me as I enter my ninth year on the Boston City Council.
So there's a real aspect of not only serving your constituents in your ward, so to speak, but also educating people who don't know anything about veterans, you know, challenges, problems about the veteran experience. What's that like for you when you see someone engage with you and try to learn more about, you know, the veterans who serve this country, counselor?
Well, I love when people want to learn more about veterans' issues. I always have time to talk to people about veterans' issues. But I also focus a lot of my effort and time on supporting veterans that have traditionally not been part of the mainstream of veterans outreach, such as women veterans or veterans of color. Women veterans are the fastest growing population of patients in the VA healthcare system, and they're also the fastest growing homeless veterans as well, are women veterans. I think we have an obligation to support women veterans, veterans of color, because they have served our nation honorably, and historically they haven't been treated all that well or with the respect like I have at the VA system or in society. And I do feel like I have an obligation, since I've been treated very well, I do feel like I have an obligation, especially to women veterans, veterans of color, that they should receive the same respect as every veteran.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's what I try to focus my attention as a veterans leader on, veterans that have historically been not part of the mainstream of veteran society. And certainly I support all veterans. My neighborhood in South Boston, again, we have a high concentration of veterans, military families. I advocate for them the best I can, but I also have an obligation to support veterans that have traditionally not been part of the mainstream. And one of the reasons I do that is the only veteran on the city council. I think it's important to go into all neighborhoods and explain what veterans benefits there are to women veterans, to veterans of color, to gay and lesbian veterans, LGBTQ veterans. And that's something I'm proud of. And whether I was on the city council or not, I would still be doing that same type of work.
Well, one of the reasons we're here, we're talking about another class of veterans that are sometimes overlooked, and that is homeless veterans. Yeah. And, you know, some people think that, you know, there's no homeless veteran in the United States, and that's a point of education we could talk about. But one of the things that came up recently was there was a veteran. He had housing, but he was on the sixth floor of a housing unit and couldn't get home and slept outside of South Station. And when I saw the story, I thought, this is somebody making this up. And then I saw his picture, and I'm like, I've walked by that gentleman every day, almost. Not every day, but, you know, a lot of times. And then I'm like, how did this happen? And then I saw that you got involved and started making things right. Can you just give us a little context around what actually happened?
Yeah, the veteran, his name is Steve, and he's a double amputee, disabled veteran, and he's an elderly gentleman. And he was living at the Ruth Barkley Apartments in the South End. And that BHA development, Boston Housing and Development, historically has a poor record, maintenance record of elevator safety. And Steve, at this particular time, was coming back from an errand, and he was unable to access the elevator up to his sixth floor apartment. And this wasn't the first time. It wasn't the first time.
Oh, wow.
It's happened many times. Because of that, he didn't know how long he would be outside waiting. At one time, he slept outside of the development. And this time, he went to South Station and slept outside. Slept part of the night inside and then slept outside as well. But there's also... And I visited Steve. I went to Ruth Barkley. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. There was a woman that wanted to go to a loved one's funeral. She was on the fifth floor. She wasn't a veteran. She wasn't able to get down on the elevator. And she called her family and said, please don't pick me up. I can't get down there. There was another woman. She had a chemotherapy appointment. She missed it because the elevator was broken. There was another person that was on the first floor. He was waiting 2 hours to get up to, I forget if it was a man or woman, he or she was waiting 2 hours to get up to get the elevator up to their apartment. Never came. They had to go to the bathroom. They couldn't wait any longer, and they just went to the bathroom right there. But it's about human dignity. It's about respect and dignity. And we can't dismiss people because they're living in public housing. We can't overlook them as if they're insignificant. Steve is a disabled veteran, double amputee. He is not insignificant. The woman that couldn't get down for her chemotherapy, she is not insignificant. She's not invisible. I think these are moral issues. And when we treat a disabled veteran in such a poor way, or treat anybody in such a poor and undignified way, it is a reflection on the residents of Boston. And that day hurt me because this gentleman gave everything he had for our nation, and our city wasn't even able to give him an elevator ride up to his apartment so he could have a safe night's sleep. That's a moral crisis as far as I'm concerned, and we're better than that as a city. And I do want to acknowledge the residents of Boston for being equally outraged about the treatment that Steve received from the Boston Housing Authority. And residents are asking me, Ed, don't give up, not just on Steve, but on all residents, people with disabilities. They are important and they are significant.
I was pleasantly surprised, sir, about the response from the city of Boston? Once this started getting out there, the demand for action was immediate. And they, and the residents, your constituents, did not want to hear excuses.
That's exactly right. The residents of the city put pressure on elected officials. Do your job. Treat Steve with respect. Don't overlook him. If there wasn't any public pressure from the residents of Boston, the status quo would have continued. So I do want to acknowledge, as you mentioned, that the residents of Boston saw this terrible injustice, and they couldn't accept it. I couldn't accept it. My colleagues on the city council agreed with me, but they said, hey, Ed, you know, you don't want to get, you know, the powers to be upset with you. You know, we still have to work with the powers to be in Boston Housing Authority and the mayor's office. That wasn't a concern to me. My only concern was Steve.
Yeah.
A disabled veteran, double amputee. What about Steve? Is he important? Is he more important than our political careers? Or has Steve earned our respect? And should we treat Steve with dignity and respect? The question for me was easy. I know City Hall is upset with me for advocating so hard in support of Steve and other people with disabilities, but I would do the same thing again. I would never turn my back on people with disabilities, people in need, and it doesn't bother me if people are upset with me because of it. I have an obligation to do my job as a city councilor, regardless of who likes it or who doesn't like it.
It was really interesting seeing once you got involved, and it didn't seem like you were doing this for social media likes or engagement or whatever. It almost seemed like you were a veteran. I know you are a veteran, but hey, I'm a veteran. This is a brother veteran, and we're going to make this right. But it was really interesting, sir, seeing the domino effect of once other groups started getting involved. And there were some civic groups that also stepped in. COPE, I believe, is one of them?
Yep. There was a civic group, a social service provider.
Okay.
There was a woman, her name is Dawn Oates, and she's a kind of a civil rights advocate for people with disabilities. And she's provided exceptional work in our city fighting for persons with disabilities. I know the city is often pushing back on her as well because of her strong advocacy for persons with disabilities. But she's doing what she believes is right, and that's ensuring people with disabilities are respected and treated with dignity. And regardless if you're a city councilor or an elected official or you're a janitor, you're a carpenter, or a resident, everybody deserves respect. And everybody can contribute to that, ensuring that respect is provided to everyone in this city. But when we see an injustice taking place that happened to Steve, we can't ignore it. We can't pretend it doesn't happen. We can't sweep it under the rug. We have to be transparent and accountable, acknowledge the problem, address the problem, solve the problem. But sweeping the problem under the rug, like BHA wanted to do, is not the answer.
No. There was a good outcome, and I had seen the story on TV and Twitter and other places, and I'm walking to work, and I see him outside of South Station with the petition. And we talked for a minute, and, you know, he's like, look, he didn't want money.
Right.
He didn't want, you know, his name in lights. He just wanted to be able to go out and be outside and then come home and go to his place without having to worry about stairs. And I'm like, Stevie, I mean, sleeping outside South Station is not fun. He's like, oh.
No.
But he wanted respect.
He wanted respect.
And it broke my heart as a veteran that happened at all.
Well, you're exactly right. When he called Boston Housing Authority, they basically told Steve, knowing that the elevator would be broken down for a period of time, do you want to call the fire department? and maybe the fire department will carry you up five flights of stairs. And that was a violation of Steve's dignity,
which
I agree with him. Steve earned respect, and he didn't want someone picking him up and carrying him as if he was insignificant, that he was not important, that he was not a man, he was not a person. And, you know, that's our job in on the city council, in the mayor's office. It's about treating people with respect and dignity. And if we can't treat a disabled veteran, double amputee, with the respect and dignity that they've earned, you know, we have lost our way when we treat people so
poorly,
and without the respect that they've earned. And as a veteran, we like to carry ourselves with a certain pride.
Yeah.
And a veteran would not want someone to pick them up and carry them somewhere. They want to do it on their own because we're strong and we want to contribute. We want to be treated in such a way and not be picked up and carried. And I just thought that was really insulting for Boston Housing Authority to request that from Steve.
There was a positive outcome to this story. And one of the positives I looked at was, again, the reaction from the Boston residents, regardless of where they lived in Boston, was like, this is unacceptable. Fix this now. We don't care how you have to do it. I would ask, winding this down, is what are some lessons that we can learn from this going forward so this doesn't happen again anywhere?
We have major problems in our Boston Housing Authority with our elevators. In many of our Boston Housing Authority buildings are specifically for persons with disabilities and seniors. And when elevators are down, it presents public safety challenges, obviously, quality of life issues, and respect and dignity for persons with disabilities. That's one. And the second one is everybody matters.
Everybody matters.
You might live in public housing. You might not have political influence. You might not have any money or be known in the city. But you are a person, and you deserve respect. You've earned respect. And the day we overlook someone that lives in public housing, a person with disabilities, a senior, as if we're above them or they're insignificant, is really the day we should get out of government. Because government is about helping people. We know that there was a problem. We should have addressed it immediately. But you can't deny a problem. You can't sweep a problem under the rug.
No, no.
The problem has to be brought to the attention of the decision makers and the public. The public has a right to know. Once that happened, we should have come up with a plan to immediately fix the elevator. And again, I'm still challenging Boston Housing Authority to fix their elevator system throughout the BHA developments. They have done a poor job, and I'm not going away. I'm going to continue to advocate for my constituents, but also public housing residents across the city, because I do believe they matter. I do believe they should be treated with dignity and respect, and I'm not going to overlook them or treat them poorly, regardless of their social and economic background. That's not how I was raised in South Boston. In South Boston, we treat everybody with respect, regardless of their income, their cut of their coat. It's about respect, and that's what I learned from my family, and that's what I learned from my neighbors in South Boston. That's what I learned serving 24 years in the United States Navy.
Last question and a half. Hundreds of veterans, thousands of veterans get out of the military every day, every month, and think about what they want to do with their lives. Many of us never consider public service after service. What would you say to a veteran who's considering, you know, I want to make change in my community, big or small, and I think I can run for, you know, selectman, ward counselor, so on and so forth. What's your counsel? What's your advice to them, sir?
I would encourage them to consider running for public office. We don't have veterans in city government that are serving besides me. We have some outstanding legislators up at the State House, including Senator Michael Rush and many others that do an exceptional job. But veterans do add something of value as elected officials. They bring a unique perspective to the job, and it's important for veterans to run for office to educate other non-veterans about why we should factor in veterans' benefits, veteran services, veterans' programs. These aren't entitlements.
No.
These are earned benefits.
Absolutely.
You know, when you raise your right hand to serve in the Army or the Marines or the Navy, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, you're willing to put your life on the line for your nation. That's the oath we take. But also the oath is, the solemn promise is, once we return, that we will be treated with respect by our government, by our city government, by our state government, and by our federal government. We don't want a handout, but
no.
We want the services and programs that we've earned. And I do want to see more veterans running for public office. If there are veterans out there interested in that, I'd love to hear from them. I'd love to talk to them. And if there are people that are non-veterans that want to support veterans, they think a veteran should be in office, I'd ask them to reach out to me as well at ed.flynn@boston.gov. I'd love to hear from them about how we can support veterans, even if they're not a veteran, because they are, they do want to get involved as well.
We do need those non-veteran supporters.
We do.
Absolutely. Counselor Flynn, I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk with me on a busy day. You got the World Cup going on. We had Scotland come in. I got to say, just in closing, the Scots were great. The Brits, I'm not so sure. I think they're still angry over the Tea Party. I think that's it.
I think you're right. I was, I had a chance to meet some of these fans from Scotland, and I was telling them when I was in the Navy, my Navy ship pulled into a place called Faslane, Scotland, and it was a kind of a submarine base in Scotland. Had an opportunity to visit Glasgow, Edinburgh, and they're wonderful people. Wonderful history, incredible history, love of their country, and they were exceptionally well behaved here in Boston. And I know the residents of Boston enjoyed having the people from Scotland here in Boston, in Massachusetts, for the World Cup. It was a great honor.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Counselor Flynn, I want to thank you for coming on and talking with me. I'd like to, you know, keep following the story and learning more about how, you know, veterans like yourself can continue to advocate for all of us, and just appreciate your time.
Thank you. I'm honored to be with you, and thank you for this wonderful invitation.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, Counselor Flynn, my guest today on Oscar Mike Radio. You can serve. You can serve anywhere. You can serve anyone, and we all matter. Counselor, thank you again. As we say on Oscar Mike Radio, we are Mission in Flight.
Every generation, every sacrifice, our nation's service members have stood up for our freedom, our families, and our future. Now it's our turn to stand up for them. This year, you can honor their service in a deeply personal way by sponsoring a $17 Veterans Wreath. Each wreath is more than a symbol. It's a heartfelt tribute to the heroes who served and to the families who carry their legacy. Visit wreathsacrossamerica.org to sponsor a wreath today. This isn't just a wreath. It's a personal gift to an American hero.
Thank you for listening and watching Oscar Mike Radio, where our active duty service members and veterans are in action, and the mission is in flight. Oscar Mike Radio is an Oversized Load Coast Sinister One production. If you are a veteran or know a veteran who needs help, please dial 988 and press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line.